This is Educating Technology, a podcast about using technology in our schools. Last week, Chris tested the renaming of a Microsoft domain, and we talked about moving from PRIs to SIP trunks. This week, we're talking about the Supermicro Chipgate, as we're naming it, the new Office 2019 installer, and using an edge router as a firewall. If you like what we're doing, you can support us by going to patreon.com/educatingtech. Now, on with the show. All right, so have you gone in and pulled out all of your server motherboards out yet?
I have, actually, and I took a crowbar to that little bitty tiny chip in there to make sure that Chi-Coms weren't listening.
Yeah. but then again, I don't know if the Dells got infected with the little chip, what we're going to call Chipgate, the Super Micros.
Chipgate's a great name for it.
But that is absolutely crazy that it was actually found. I mean, people found out they were doing it.
It happened. I mean, that's the craziest part, is this happened, and it's been happening since 2015.
Yes, and it's like, why are we just now finding out about it? I don't know.
Well, we are, but those corporations knew.
Yeah, and probably the government knew and did what they needed to do, and it's probably just like been declassified now, and so now they're letting the public know like what happened.
I like to dog Apple. But to their credit, as soon as they found out, they actually ripped and pulled every one of those servers and completely severed the relationship with that manufacturer.
And Supermicro is a... Well, I guess for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, Supermicro servers built in China apparently had a chip, a very, very small, tiny chip, installed onto this other component that was put on their server motherboards that apparently gave access to things that they didn't need access to as far as like hardware and software. And so that's kind of what we're talking about, that Supermicro had this big thing with Chinese manufacturers building their motherboards with these chips in them, and they got caught, and bad things are happening, I guess, now.
Yeah, there's a really good graphic on Bloomberg Business, and we'll have to put a link in there for the show notes for this, because it has this really cool teardown of the motherboard on the very top of the article, and that shows you exactly how big this chip was. And yeah, when the motherboard's completely populated with what it was supposed to have on there, you wouldn't notice this. I mean, this was really, really cleverly engineered. And the way it engineered itself, it was into the memory controller, so it actually had access to whatever it wanted.
Yeah, I mean, so kudos to Apple and Amazon, because I know Amazon, they purchased some company to run AWS, or something that would become AWS, and they had them, and so I guess they took care of them there too, so.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just crazy.
It shows you just how easily an entire supply chain can be compromised.
And you know it's still happening.
Of course it is. Like we were discussing off air, I was thinking, you know, this one was a surface mount chip. Let's say you had a fab. Let's say Intel was using some other fab. Or here, we'll pick on Apple's using TSMC to manufacture chips. What's to stop TSMC from putting something on the die of the chip that does the same thing? The only way Apple would ever know is if they x-rayed the chip and compared it to the engineering samples that they approved.
I mean, yeah, it's like, what kind of checks and balances do they have? At least I think Apple has like Apple people like at their supply chain people like watching them. So, I mean, there is that. But I mean, but you, like you said, it's like they got this one company that's making the chips, but you know they're going to subcontract out some part of it.
Oh, yeah. And to be quite honest, if the chip fab is in China, not the assembly, the chip fab, I don't know if I could trust it at this point now.
I mean, yeah, because this is a big breach. I mean, this was bad. This is a bad
thing. And we know exactly who did it. I mean, it is the Chinese government.
Well, I don't know. Well, I mean, yeah, we know, but...
No, it's exactly who it is.
It's,
I mean.
it's just crazy that this is where we're at, but... I don't know.
Who's the future we didn't want today?
Yeah, but who's to say we're not doing the same things for the one technology thing that we actually put together in America? You know, the Mac, the trash can Mac Pro that everybody's buying?
Oh, come on now. No, you know, we do similar things, though. I mean, you remember Cisco a couple years ago had the same issue with gear that they exported. During the export process, customs seized the gear. And it actually went off to another company to have a chip added to the board after Cisco had shipped it and verified it. So it was during the transit process that the United States government had actually modified some Cisco network gear to do this very same thing.
So, yeah, we're all doing it to each other.
We're all doing it.
But
and then we forget about it, and then we move on, and then we do it again.
Yeah. So, as long as I just don't know that my iPhone is is infected with something, I'll be okay.
You know, Siri does sound like a Chinese name.
Yeah. A little bit, yeah. But it's like it's just crazy that this is what we got to deal with now. I mean, it's ransomware and rogue chips, I guess.
Yeah.
It's the world we live in.
You know, it could save us all. Open source.
Yeah.
Open source processors, open source hardware, open source software.
Yeah, because nobody in China or Russia contribute anything to open source, right?
Well, it's not that, but at least the source code's being vetted. You can see it. Like with OpenRISC, I really like RISC-V5. I mean, that's an open processor architecture, and it's gained a lot of traction. In fact, NVIDIA uses RISC-V5 processors on their GPUs. So, I mean, it's got a lot of really cool things. Western Digital uses them in a lot of their appliances. Everyone is now developing a RISC-V chip. So, yeah.
Well,
sorry, Intel and AMD.
And like you said, I mean, since it's open source, you can see the code, you can see the parts, you can see the schematics, and so you know exactly what's going into it. So,
yeah, and compare it to what you actually have.
It's like, this is, I guess they could do like a weight test. It's like, this server was supposed to weigh this much, and then since they added that little bitty tiny chip, now it's like a fraction of a gram.
You'd have to like make sure there's no dust on it or anything, because that thing was tiny.
Yeah, because there were just, I mean, how else would you find it other than, the way Apple did by just kind of monitoring network logs?
Yep.
I mean,
that's why you need good firewalls and stuff.
And I don't know about you, but but one of the most loathsome jobs that I have here is when I have to check the filter logs for something. It's just horrible going through filter logs. And so I can just imagine the poor sap that had to go through filter and firewall and all those different kind of logs to try to determine what was going on. I mean, so
this would be an appropriate time to throw in a corporate sponsor if we had one for this, you know, Splunk, automatic data disaggregation,
or syslog, right?
Yeah, any of them.
Filtering some syslog. You know, speaking of syslog, I know you've moved locations. Have you?
Oh, this is true.
Do you have my syslog server ready yet?
Oh, I have it working. I mean, you just want a GUI for some reason.
I'm just messing. I know you're busy.
It does work.
But let me tell you what I've been doing for the past 2 days. Things have been kind of slow around here. And so I've been tackling a problem that, well, I wouldn't necessarily say it was a problem. It was just something that I've wanted to do for a long time. We have these three televisions in our cafeteria that we have a couple of DirecTV receivers hooked up to for the kids to basically watch sports and news during lunch. And so we put these TVs in, and they're like Vizio SmartCast TVs. So they have some like smarts built into them. And at the time I was like, man, why did we get these smart TVs? Well, now I'm like, I'm glad we got those smart TVs, because something I wanted to do from like day one, like putting them in, was like, how can I automate turning these TVs on and off every day? That's just something I've always wanted to do. I've looked at everything like from, I mean, I started with like Wemo switches because, you know, some TVs you can set up that like once the TV realizes that it has power, it'll turn itself on. And so I was looking into like a Wemo switch to just basically turn the power on and off to the TV. But these TVs won't turn on automatically whenever they get power. So the Wemo switch was out. And so I ended up, and then we had a problem with kids in their Android phones using the infrared receivers on the phones, or senders rather, to change the inputs on the televisions. So they were trying to switch to the smart stuff to try to open Netflix and try to start streaming stuff. But of course, the filter was blocking all that from actually working, but it was just kind of annoying that here we are in the middle of lunch and the TV's changing inputs. And so I had to solve that problem, and there's really only one way to solve that problem, and it is to put electrical tape over the infrared receiver on the bottom of the TV, so no remote will work on it. And so the remotes are broke now at this point. And so I was only really left with one option. Well, two. You could manually turn the TV on, or you can use the awful Vizio SmartCast app on the iPhone.
Oh my goodness, I've had to use that app before on Android. So we know those little things tend to run a little better on iOS. Think about it on Android.
Oh, it was bad enough that that's what I had to use to set the TV up. Because at the time, the TVs, I mean, they've gotten firmware upgrades actually where you can actually use the remote to set it up now. But when I got these TVs, you had to use the app to set it up. And so you had to Bluetooth pair it, and then you had to do the Wi-Fi trick. And then it was just a nightmare. Well, that started working, and it was fine. And so that's what I would do is just I'd come in, I'd open the app, switch to one of the TVs, wait till I could turn it on, switch to the next TV, wait till I could turn it, well, you know, repeat the process three times or two more times. Well, a while ago, I noticed that, or I read that Vizio added Alexa support to the TVs. And I didn't think about it because it's like, well, I don't have an Echo. I don't have an Echo Dot. I don't have anything in my office that can do Amazon Alexa stuff. And so, and I'm sorry if your Echo or whatever just went off to any of our listeners, but shouldn't be listening.
Hey,
anyway.
Alexa.
Shouldn't be listening anyway. But, and so I just got to dig into yesterday, and I was like, you know, I was like, because, you know, Siri Shortcuts just came out, and I was thinking, you know, maybe there's a way that I could use like Siri Shortcuts to maybe connect to the Vizio app to see about connecting to be able to like use voice to turn these TVs on and off instead of going through the app. Well, I got to digging in the Vizio SmartCast app and I saw the connect to Alexa setting for the TVs. And so I downloaded the Alexa app for iOS. And so I set up my Amazon account on there. And so now I have Alexa on my phone like crazy. And then I connected the TVs to the Alexa. And now I can open the Alexa app and say, turn cafeteria on, and all three TVs turn off. And I could say, turn cafeteria off, and all three TVs turn off. And
then
yesterday afternoon when I got home, I was digging a little bit more, and you can set schedules based on time of day and like what day of the week it is. And so now I have fully automated these televisions to turn on at a certain time by themselves and then turn off by themselves at a certain time without my device even having to be there. It's just crazy. Okay. And I want to talk a little bit because there was something else I was going to do. I started setting up HomeBridge, which is sort of like a HomeKit bridge to devices that are not HomeKit compatible. And so I was setting up HomeBridge, started that yesterday afternoon. And then I found the scheduling part and I was like, well, now I don't really need to do the HomeBridge stuff. But I was like, you know, I've come this far. I'm going to try it just to see if I could do it. And so I did it. I did that today. I set up the HomeBridge. So now I can control the TVs with Siri. But here's where I find why people like the Amazon stuff over Siri stuff. Like why they like the cloud-based stuff like Google or Amazon over Siri. Because the Amazon stuff will work wherever my device is. As long as the TVs are still connected to the internet, because they're basically doing a connection to Amazon servers in the cloud. And so I could be at my house and say, Alexa, turn the TVs on, and they will turn on. And that's why the schedule works. Siri is limited to my device being connected to the same Wi-Fi that the TVs are on. And so I can kind of see why, in some instances, even though Siri is getting more and more powerful, there's still some instances that Alexa is more powerful because it's not like network dependent to do things. Now, I think it may be different if I had like an Apple TV fourth gen running here that would act kind of like a HomeKit hub that was always connected to the internet. I think it might work that way, but I'm not going to go buy $150. I wouldn't go buy a $40 Echo Dot to pull this off. Why would I go spend $150 and get an Apple TV 4? Now, man, it would be nice to have one in here. But
what'd you do with it?
Well, I just watched the Apple events. But but my third gen one that I have sitting in front of me on my little TV works just fine for that too. So
okay,
and it shows pictures of my kid on the iCloud photo screensaver. So that's pretty nice too. So it's just been really nice to be able to. I was able to have some time to figure out this little annoyance that I've been having to be able to just like take care of on itself. And so I kind of like it. I kind of like this whole automating thing and it makes me want to know like what else around here can I automate?
Dude, that's awesome. I love automating things. I mean, my goal in life is to like automate myself out of a job.
I was telling our superintendent about what I did and because he saw me post about it on Twitter. He's like, yeah, that's what we'll do. We'll just automate you right out the door. It's like, that's the plan.
It is the plan. It's a valiant plan. I mean, it saves good money, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, who wouldn't want everything to run so smooth that it just ran itself? I mean, I've even come to the point, it's like I'm using Siri shortcuts now to, I have a button that I push on my phone or my iPad that says network downtime. And then it asks me for a start date and time and an end date and time. And then it crafts the email for me to just hit send, to send to our staff, letting them know that we're going to be down for maintenance for the network or whatever. And so it's just little things like that to just save some time. Now, granted, that email probably would have took me like 30 seconds to write, but that's just one little thing that I could do to save just a little bit of time. So, I mean, it's those little things that I just kind of want to find more things to be able to do. And not to mention, now I kind of want a thermostat that can connect to home automation and some lights and a garage door opener and some door locks.
I do have one of those thermostats at the house. I have. It's not a Nest or anything like that. Mine is kind of a baby automation one. It doesn't really use cloud services to determine behaviors because, by golly, I want my air condition on when I want it on.
Yeah.
It's my air condition.
Yeah.
And I want, as soon as my wife walks out the door, I want to be able to push the button to go down, 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 down. And not have to go reprogram schedules.
Yeah.
But I do love it. I do those. Man, it's so convenient, isn't it?
It is. And it's like, I'm on the mindset. It's like, I don't want an Echo device in my house. I mean, as much as I'd like a HomePod because they sound amazing, I don't really want one of those in my house, even though I would trust it more than the Echo, because, I mean, you just hear those horror stories about, like, recordings being sent to random people from the Echo devices. And so I don't
definitely
really...
Definitely don't put any Echoes in your bedroom.
And so it's like, if I do any, like, home automation stuff, I want to use, like, the HomeKit stuff so I can just use my phone or whatever. And it's like, this is just, but I haven't, for one, the stuff is just expensive. I mean, it's like really, I mean, light bulbs should not cost $30. I mean, that's just a little bit out there, and that's probably like the low end. When you get into like the Hue lights and stuff, those things can get kind of pricey.
Philips is proud of theirs,
but it's like, but I mean, you can understand the price. I mean, it's got a built-in like wireless adapter in it and all these different other things. But I guess the two main things that I would like to automate at the house is the garage door in the air conditioner, and I would be fine with just that.
Well, I got something you need to check out, and everybody else does too. There's an open source project called Home Assistant that integrates with everything.
Well, that's kind of what HomeBridge does in a way.
Well, this just isn't a bridge. This is actually the full package, though.
Oh, and so it just sort of integrates?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it can do everything. In fact, you can tie it into Amazon Echo and all that stuff if you want to. But you don't have to. I mean, it'll ever do everything from Plex to Ecobee to, heck, you can do your own custom Arduino stuff. It even has IKEA hardware listed as supported.
Yeah, I mean, that really does sound like a project like HomeBridge, because HomeBridge sort of just, it has like a Plex plugin, it has like a Hue Light plugin, it has like this Vizio plugin. It's all plugins based on like the different kind of devices
you want. I wonder if that was forked from Home Assistant, because Home Assistant's been around for a long time.
Maybe so, because it's just kind of handy. I mean, the hardest thing was getting the thing to run on startup when the little server booted, because it used to run like as a command that you ran as a user, and so I'd have to like be logged in all the time, and so I had to like do some service stuff in Ubuntu to get it to work, and it works great. I mean, and it's really convenient to be able to say, "Hey, lady, turn the TVs on," and they turn on.
And that's cool.
It's just one of those little things that it's like, now I just want to automate all the things. It's like, what else can you automate? And so I was even looking into Siri Shortcuts today. I was showing you that Siri Shortcuts has the ability to run like SSH scripts. And so I was trying to come up with a way to build a shortcut that actually updated my Ubuntu servers. And so the only way I really could figure out how to do it was to like lessen the security of the box. And I didn't really want to go that far. So maybe I'll find something else I could do to,
hey, we're
to
gonna
pull
build
it off.
You a note. We're going to build you a node agent.
And then, so it's like, it's just really cool. Just the power that, well, workflow, it's now Siri Shortcuts now. The Shortcuts app. It's just amazing the things that it can do. And so Siri's gotten a lot more powerful just by integrating into something that was already there.
Very cool.
So, but yeah, so I'm just trying to figure out things that I can automate and just make life a little bit easier. I mean, we automate switch backups. and write mems by using the archive command. I mean, there's some things that you can do like that. And it's like you can use scripts in Windows and PowerShell to automate some things. Like I have my weekly WSUS cleanup script running on Friday afternoons. So that has helped keep my WSUS server from getting a little out of control. So I'm just trying to find more and more little things that I can automate. So that's just one less thing that I have to worry about.
Yep, it all adds up quickly.
But
so next, your office is going to be full of little ESP8266 modules where you've written their little, got their little pins. All right, so you walk in, it sees you walk in, it like flips a relay to turn on the light switch. We see, like
you know, I actually thought about that because it's like with the home app, it's like once I like show up at a location, you can actually turn the TVs on. And so I thought about doing, it's like, well, maybe when I show up at the school, turn the TVs on. But then again, I'm always coming and going out of the high school, so I just don't want the TVs off and on, off and on, off and on. But then again, it's also dependent on being on the same Wi-Fi. And so the TVs are connected to the Wi-Fi that I have in my office, which is my little Unify access point, because like they just didn't like the Cisco at all. And so I had to connect them to this one. And so when I walk too far away from it, I disconnect from it. And so.
So is it the same Wi-Fi network or is it the same MDNS zone?
It's pretty much the same MDNS zone. That's the, so that's the thing it
boils
down
to. You could either do multicast routing or some Avahi bridges.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I can make it work. And like the Cisco has like the, Bonjour gateway built into it. So, I mean, yeah. it would probably work. It's just the TVs just didn't like the Cisco wireless. It's like,
they just keep disconnecting or
something. It was that. And it's like the app just couldn't see the TVs like through the controller. I mean, it's like, even though they were on the same network, I guess. I mean, I would connect them to the same network that, well, no, I couldn't do that because my phone was on the staff wireless, which uses radius authentication, and apparently the TVs that are smart TVs aren't smart enough to connect to 802.1x. So
no, they're not that smart. They're not like GT smart. They're just like not resource class smart.
Yeah, and so so yeah, but it's just neat, and it's just handy just to have this access point in here to be able to do like Chromebook setups and things like that to not have to worry about that.
I'm excited. I got my Unify US 48 500 watt switch here. I got my another one coming in with some access points for E-rate evaluations for our project, because you know you got to do the E-rate eval first before you do the hardware. So we are going to do our evaluations. We're going to do everything 100% correct, because that's what you do. You do things correct.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm excited about it. They should be in tomorrow.
But speaking of Ubiquiti, how's this firewall you put in?
Dude, I love it. It's so fun. we talk like it's a big firewall. No, it's an edge router light that I had sitting on a shelf at my house.
Yeah, it's
that wasn't in use.
The what? The $120 box, $100 box, something
like
that?
Yeah, it's actually the one that I bought back when I was working at Lamar in 2012.
So, but I mean, it's working great. I mean,
it was working great. In fact, they've done impressive things to the software since I originally got it. And so I actually have some outbound firewall rules using deep packet inspection policies. So yeah, it's actually pretty cool. I got a rule in there that says, drop connections to proxies.
Yeah. So how are your students liking your new firewall?
I think the quote was, we don't like you as much as the old IT director, but you seem to know stuff.
Yeah, because you just basically shut them down.
I did.
Yeah, the kid was like, our VPNs aren't working today. And you were like, just take off today. Your VPNs are just not working, period. It's amazing.
It's really impressive with the amount of performance that you get out of these really expensive boxes. I mean, it really puts things in perspective to other vendors. If I'm doing this with an $89 piece of equipment.
Yeah, why do I need to buy a $10,000 Cisco box?
What should you be able to do for me at $4,000?
Yeah.
And that's how I have to take the approach to things, because I know it can be done this way. And it's done fairly easily. I mean, in fact, there was no troubleshooting after we did when I did the initial migration. It just worked. All the rules and everything just built in, that I built in there prior, just worked. I mean, you got what you expected.
Now, don't get me wrong. We're not recommending everybody go out and buy a $90 box
no,
to put as their firewall.
Gosh, no,
I mean,
not at all.
The district you're
this
at
was like,
is
I didn't have one.
Yeah, and the district you're at is small. I mean, so you don't have a lot of connections going through
our
your
million
thing.
That million packets per second throughput thing that it claims. Yeah, we're getting there. I mean, I stay at about 68% CPU utilization on the box. So, yeah. I mean, it's not ideal,
but that being
but it's better
said,
than nothing.
But that being said, there are Ubiquiti firewalls out there that can handle bigger districts.
Absolutely.
I mean,
They have some, if you wanted to get a router with the stateful stuff, the XG does line rate 10 gig.
And so, I mean, so for, and probably less than $300 too, probably, right?
Oh, let's go look real quick.
I mean,
BNT.com, because
I mean,
we'll do it live.
I mean, even if you buy some of their bulkier hardware, I mean, it's still going to be able to handle it. And it's still going to be able to have all the features. I mean, it's just, but that's like a regular firewall too. I mean, if you're going to buy a Cisco ASA, you have to buy it sized up for your environment and actually bigger.
Absolutely.
And actually bigger. You want to size it up bigger so that 5 years down the road, it still works. And see, and that's kind of where I'm at. Like my bandwidth can be increased like 50 more megs. And then I am at the max of my, that my ASA is like rated for. I mean, it has gig connections, so in theory I should be able to have a gig connection to the internet, but it takes so much CPU overhead, it actually throttles down the connection to like 300 meg to do the inspections and stuff that it actually does to monitor that traffic. And so, but it's just a lot of traffic going through it, and firewalls do a whole lot of stuff. I mean, it's not just like a switch. I mean, it's doing a bunch of stuff.
They're doing other things. So, for example, Infinity, the Edge Router Infinity, it's got 8 ports of 10 gig on it. It's a 16 core processor in it, and it can do 80 gigabit line rate when you're not doing like deep packet inspection and those things. Of course, those things slow it down, but even when you start doing that, you're getting 12 gigabit throughput. So, yeah, that'd make a pretty good edge router.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean,
kidding.
You going to get a 12 gig internet connection anytime soon?
No, probably not.
Yeah.
I would love it, but probably not.
Yeah, so, I mean, this would actually be the more correct solution if I wanted to stay with something like this. But this is just temporarily until 470s and all that are done, because I'm going to stay with Ubiquiti products, but I'm not going to be using, heavens, let's hope I'm not using an Edge Router Lite for long.
Yeah, I mean, but it's solving a problem that you had.
Gosh, it has made it to where I have control of my own network again.
I mean, managed firewall services are great for people that need help managing firewalls. I mean, but you're then limited to the things you can and cannot do with your internal networks.
Yes.
You can't just throw in another VLAN whenever you need to throw in a VLAN. That's one more person that you have to contact to be able to set up another VLAN. And so, and then they'd have to do like routing on their end and things like that. But when you have that firewall in between you, your ISP and yourself, I mean, it's just like your home router. I mean, your home internet, you're getting some public address from them, but you can use your 192s inside, but you can make that whatever you want. And see, and now you can do however many 192s you want in your network, or 10 dots.
Yeah, I about to say, I think as soon as the firewall was done, I created 10 VLANs.
Yeah, I mean, and so it's like the more VLANs, the better.
Yep. So now I can aggregate. And I'm still waiting on our firewall, our internet filter company to get back with me on doing proper radius authentication.
You know,
that way I can segregate out students, staff, and all that stuff appropriately.
I did that, and I'm racking my brains. Every time you mention that to me, I'm racking my brains to remember how I did that with NetSpective. I pulled it
off. They actually have a utility that they have to customize at their offices.
Well, I didn't have that. I had something else, and it worked phenomenally. I mean, and it was one of the things that it was like when I got the eyeballs, will I be able to pull the same thing off? Because we started doing that kind of wireless at the service center, and so I wanted to be able to filter their policies based on who they logged into, based on the radius. And I was able to do that with the NetSpective we had at the time. So unless with the new appliance, unless they're doing something different, I just can't remember what I did.
They listed as one of the authentication methods in the GUI when you log into it, because, yeah, live.
I mean, is it the... No, because the NetSpective used a little agent that ran it log on.
Yeah, that it was the WF log on agent.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there was like a piece that ran on the... There was something that would monitor radius logs, and that's how they did it.
So they have in there, they have a... They call it the Wi-Fi agent. But it says to download... You know, when you go in there to download the agents, you get the list of all of them. You can download and whatnot.
Yeah.
With a Wi-Fi agent, actually says content and expected support.
Well, I don't remember.
Instead of downloading.
I don't remember. It's been many years, but I don't remember a Wi-Fi agent.
Well, I've contacted. Contact me back. Yeah. Please. I'm tired of people not calling me back.
Yeah, I mean, it's rare for you to call somebody. So, I mean.
I mean, please.
So, you're getting a taste of your own medicine. How does that feel?
I don't like it. Yeah, because I'm horrible at answering stuff.
But it's okay. But yeah, I remember.
No, I'm not. I answer and I overpromise and underdeliver. That's what I do.
Yeah. But I remember doing something to pull that off. I might have to dig through my notes in my old email. Maybe I have something. But I remember doing it with the Netspective. Because when I came over here to Orangefield and we had an iBoss, I was like, can I do that in iBoss? Surely I can. Because I was doing, we were doing the Radius, we were setting that up at different school districts. Like we did it at Sabine Pass and Warren, I think. We were mm-hmm. setting that Radius authentication up and they were using those kind of filters. So I just have to remember what it was. I don't know. I'm getting old.
Yeah. Oh, dude, you are. We are all getting old.
Yeah.
I was helping the DPS officers this week do some stuff here at the school. And one was like, do you know so-and-so? I was like, no. Well, I graduated in 2011 from high school. I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm old.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Yeah. We're just getting old. But let's round out our conversation today with something odd that we're going to talk about. We had a Microsoft event, obviously. We got new Surface products. We got Surface products in black, which is phenomenal because.
And we got headphones.
Yeah. So that's just what we need. So we got headphones and we got Surface products. And apparently the Surface Studio got some nice upgrades, but they should have did better with the processor, is from what I understand.
Well, it's still better than any Apple.
But the thing that, yeah, hey now, the thing I wanted to, that I kind of took away from the event is obviously the October 2018 update for Windows 10 is now available. And so you can go grab that.
It deletes your documents if you're not careful. Did you see that bug?
No, I didn't see that bug.
Yeah, there's a bug where it like completely wiped everybody's documents.
Oh, well, that's good because I've already installed it on like two machines. And so, well, who cares? I don't know that I had any. Well, I store everything in Google Drive, so it's okay.
I just thought it was neat. I was like, of course, you'd announce something and then it would be broke the next day.
Yeah. But also, Office 2019 is out and available now. And the thing that I kind of wanted to mention for schools, those of us that are on volume licensing, and I think even like if you weren't on volume licensing, you used to have a Office customization tool, the OCT, which basically you extracted the ISO file that you would download into a folder, and then you can kind of customize like the types of applications you wanted to install, like you would leave out Access or Outlook or whatever it is you wanted to leave out of the installation. Mine was always Skype for Business because once you open that accidentally, you can never get rid of it.
It's like Groove. Oh my, just go away, Groove.
And so they have gone away with the OCT installation. They have gone away with downloading the ISOs from the volume license site. And now you have to use the Office deployment tool, which basically is a setup.exe that has basically, from what I can tell, two command switches, either download or configure. Probably has more, but that's the ones that you use. And you customize, you basically take this XML file and you make this XML file, which basically is doing the same thing. You set like which version you want to install, either retail or volume license. You can exclude applications from your install. You can add applications like Visio and Project. You can set your Mac address key, Mac activation key, I guess.
Yeah.
Machine. I don't know what the M stands for. Mac key. M-A-K. Or you can leave that blank if you do Active Directory authentication or activation like we do. And you can tell it to automatically accept the EULAs and don't show anything, or you can show things however you want to do that. It's really kind of neat. Once I wrapped my head around and found the documentation on what to use for the XML file, because the examples weren't very good.
Yeah, the example was like, one line. And you're like, really?
And it was
it
like,
does way more than that.
And you downloaded the stuff from the volume license website, and they gave you retail stuff in the examples. And so I was a little bit confused by that. But once I found the documentation with the volume licensing, with all the switches for the XML, all the different things that you can do in the XML, that was really, really handy. I mean, since you had no ISO file, you had to go to Microsoft and use the tool to download it. But inside the XML file, you can actually tell it to cache the installs to your server. And so
slash download.
Yeah. And so I was able to do that. And then when you do slash configure with that same XML file, it will actually install from the downloads that you did. And so it's just really neat how they did it, And I really appreciate it. In fact, Office 2019 for the Mac came out sometime last week, and it basically kind of did the same thing. They took the ISO file that you would download for Mac, and they just basically gave you a link to the public download of Office 2019 for Mac. But then you had like a PKG file, which was a volume license serializer, which basically turned it into the volume licensing. And so it's almost like they're changing really how they do things. And yeah. And I really like it. It's like basically
I do like it. I mean, and what's really cool, and I think this is like a perfect opportunity for us. Hey, we could build the GUI tool for that for the Patreon supporters.
Well, you can build a GUI tool for it. I just now tried to figure out how to do Node.js today, and I'd like freaked my brain out. So I mean, you might have to do it. But yeah, it's just, I mean, it kind of started with Windows 10 where you just basically went to their website and downloaded the ISO file. I mean, when has Microsoft ever just publicly allowed an ISO file of their operating system to be able to download like that?
Hey, you know, they open sourced two operating systems this week, too.
Was it XP?
No, it's not that good. It was DOS 2 and 3.
Oh, okay. Well,
but they did open source them.
Yeah, the ones that aren't even being used in the back end anymore.
Hey, free DOS.
But I mean, it's just, I like this new direction that Microsoft is taking. I really do.
I absolutely love it.
And then they offer, and then I read that they have this new payment thing to buy a Surface device. And I kind of got excited there for a little bit until I read the fine print. They were like, bundle your Surface with your Office 365. And I was like, hey, that's kind of cool. Just pay a monthly, basically rent a Surface, you know, just lease it and just keep paying every month. And just whenever a new Surface comes out, just send in your old one and they send you a new one. No, it's not like that.
What is it like? I thought they already had that program.
Basically, I think they killed that program and they basically made it. It's basically a 2-year finance on a Surface product and then it's yours. And so basically doing a 0% finance on a Surface product. So
how do they make money like that?
I don't think they care, to be honest with you, at this point. I mean, think they're just...
And to be honest, the Surface products are phenomenal. They really are.
Except the dock.
Well, we don't talk about the dock. That doesn't exist.
Yeah, the dock is pretty bad.
Yeah. I mean, they do have a really good product there.
And it really is pretty. Unlike that leather laptop that HP came out with.
I think the leather laptop's awesome.
No, it was...
I like it.
It was hideous. I mean...
No, it's not hideous.
I mean...
That's the color of the inside of my truck.
Well, that's different because it's a car, not a computer. I mean...
But who cares? Think about how durable leather is.
Well, I mean, and it'll probably wear nice and when it gets well, I just, well, you know, well if and
I,
worn.
If I had the money, I would buy everybody in PETA one.
That's crazy, but yeah, so new Office stuff, new Surface products, so yeah, Microsoft's doing some interesting things.
I do have one more announcement we got to make before we wrap it up.
What's that?
AMD
of course
is gonna be I haven't got my AMD news in this
hey
week.
Dude, you know, I added it to my stocks app because, you know, that's what we have on iOS is this awesome stocks app, and I have every time I open that thing it is never below $32.
I made a good prediction there.
You did.
But and I made that prediction when it was less than 9.
So hopefully you bought some while you was less than 9.
I did. I did. And I sold it when it hit 32.
Oh, well, there you go. Should have kept it a little bit longer.
No, it'll drop. It'll market correct because people do the same thing. And then I'll buy it again. And then it'll jump to 40. 40 is my next one.
There you go.
But so CES 2019, AMD is going to be doing the keynote. And they'll be introducing the world's first high-performance 7-nanometer CPUs, because A10 whatever blah 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 Apple Bionics are not high-performance. They're just CPUs.
Oh, I see.
So, yeah, they can do real work, these.
Hey, so, mine can do real work. It can turn my TVs on and off with my voice.
There you go. But they're also going to be introducing, this one's the big deal, 7-nanometer GPUs.
Oh, so, man, you're going to be able to pack in some GPUs on those cards.
Oh, and so this is going to be the Zen 2 architecture. It's not like Zen 2, the Ryzen 2, Zen 2, you know, TikTok. But so yeah, they're not talking about it, but the capacity for core count on the normal AM4 socket that they have right now could be increased to 16 cores, 32 threads on the normal one.
No, man.
And what that sets the stage for is for the server products and the TR4 socket stuff to have 128 core, 256 thread CPUs.
Man, can you imagine using some VDI on those things?
Dude, it's so cool.
Having the CPU so cool. power and the graphics back in to be able to pull those off, man.
Yeah,
are we so still even thinking about VDI? Is that still a thing anymore? Or are we just all Chromebooks now?
I think we're all Chromebooks.
Chromebooks
now,
are cheaper.
Yeah, I just had to shove in my AMD news there. So yeah, we're gonna get some 7-nanometer Vega from January.
Well, that's good.
Which means, hey, I got a Vega Frontier Edition. If somebody wants to look into getting it, it's very pretty in blue and has 16 gig of HBM2 memory.
He's got to make room for some new stuff.
Yes. I mean, out with the old, in with the new.
That's kind of what I did. I sold some stuff, got rid of it, made a little bit of cash, paid for some other new things that I bought. So everything's hunky-dory. But look.
Yeah, I really need to benchmark these. It's not a want. I need to.
Yeah. It's like, you need to make a video. You hadn't made a video in a while.
I know.
Things have been busy, though. Busy. You've been in transition, so changing jobs. So, but hey, look, episode 49. We're getting there. 52. That's the goal, right? And then and after the 52, we're done. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, episode 49, educatingtech.net/49. You can go get the links in the show notes, particularly these Ubiquiti links, and read up on this cool Bloomberg article on this Supermicro. It's a bit of a long read, so give it about 10-15 minutes to get all the way through.
Or you can
it.
Just stare at the picture for 5 minutes like I did.
Yeah, the picture is kind of cool. Is that the one with the pencil and the little thing?
Well, no, it's the one where they have show the motherboard and the components start disappearing on it, and except for that one little chip.
Oh, I didn't see that picture.
It was the very top of the article.
Oh, I missed that one.
You started scrolling.
Well, it might have been my ad blocker.
Yeah, don't do that.
But yeah,
actually do that, but not on this page, just so you can see it.
Yeah, it's just go get the show notes. If you want to reach out to us on Twitter, we're at Educating Tech. Chris is at Feeks, and I'm at Twist of Matt's. Send us an email at educatingtech@gmail.com, and that's it. Another week. So we'll see you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.